Blog Talk Radio.
Our roots began in Africa, where we enjoyed self-determination and freedom, which were rooted in our sovereignty. Peace, family. Welcome to Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us weekly radio program that airs every Thursday evening from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Dare to Win is the place where we have sobering conversation about the economic plight of Black people and the imperatives that we build the global economic machinery that will free us and put us once again on the path of making history. We at Us Lifting Us have developed an exact methodology on how to build this global machinery and pass it forward to our children and future generations. To join tonight's conversation, please call 929-477-2789. Press the number 1 on your phone when you want to make a comment or ask a question. If you prefer to listen on your computer, go to www.usliftingus.com. Scroll down to the bottom of the homepage, click on the Dare to Win button, then click on Listen Live. At that time, you will be on the Blog Talk Radio site. If you want to get reminders from Blog Talk Radio for upcoming Dare to Win programs, please click on the follow button. Ulu members, we have our own social media community. Please join if you have not already done so. There is a Dare to Win group, and we would like to have your feedback on past Dare to Win programs, as well as topic suggestions for future programs. Go to usliftingus.com. You can reach the Ulu community through the members-only portal. When you register for the Ulu community, please use the same name you used when you joined me. I'm Sister Q, and joining me for this evening's discussion are Brother T and Brother Thurman. Tonight's topic is community conversations with the people. Peace, Brother Auntie. How are you doing tonight?
I am good, Sister Q. Good to hear you. Good to be with the family tonight.
Good to have you with us. Brother Thurman, peace. How are you tonight?
Well, I'm so uplifted. I'm excited. It's always precious to be in the company of the family.
It's good to have you here with us. So who would like to start? Brother Auntie?
Sure. I've been thinking about a couple of things. And let me just lay them out, and then we can kind of also hear what's on Brother Thurman's mind, and then I guess dive into all of it during the course of the hour. The first thing has to do with making very clear that what we in Ulu are doing, we are laying the foundation of a new global economic system, which is to say we are building a new civilization. Now, I lay that out like that because when we began this journey, we were talking about an Ulu Mart, a 150,000 square foot space in which we which would be a cooperatively owned venue, and it would generate income back to our communities. We still have that Ulu Mart as part of our vision. As we grew in our understanding of the economic work that was in front of us, we quickly realized that in order to build African enterprises, that we had to put underneath them a philosophical foundation that would enable us to build strong neighborhoods and communities and ultimately nations. We came to that understanding because the economic system provides the foundation of any community or society or any civilization. So everything, the values, how people interact with one another, all of that is done through the economic base. So when we were talking about beginning to harness economic power on behalf of Black people, it became very clear that we were building an economic base, and therefore we had to give a lot of thought to the value system that would make up this base. So that was one point. The other thing is that we are all familiar with the saying that a chain is only as strong as its weakest link. I see that our challenge is to make sure that each link in our chain is African strong. That's right. Everybody in the Black community has a role to play in our liberation struggle. We each have to commit to being our healthiest selves, our smartest selves, and ultimately our divine selves. And so because we've been approaching our condition of lacking power, trying only to manipulate external conditions. In other words, setting up businesses, influencing the political structure, having some say-so in the social relations in our community. And all of that's good and all of that's important. What we were not talking about is the internal changes, what Baba Hekima talks about, internal reparations. In other words, making sure that each of us as individuals are the healthiest that we can be, are growing as rapidly as we need to grow to be effective in the environment that's changing so rapidly around us. So it's become more and more clear to me that each one of us has got to be responsible for our own spiritual, emotional, intellectual development. And this is not something that we can leave to the side or not take very seriously because, again, the chain is only as strong as its weakest link. So we've got work to do in terms of building ourselves up. And then the last thing that how all this ties together in my mind, Sister Q, has to do with we know that we're under assault. We see it from the Supreme Court. We see it from the state legislatures. We see it from local police. We see it from vigilante groups operating in our neighborhoods. And most tragically of all, we are now at a point where we are doing great harm to ourselves. And so how do we protect ourselves? How do we move from a defensive posture to an offensive posture? It almost seems as an impossible kind of challenge. The truth of the matter that we're all discovering is that inside of each of us are an array of spiritual, psycho, intellectual, emotional tools and empowerments that make us extremely effective in what we're trying to do. We've heard from other venues that individuals can't really take on institutions, and that's true. So we have to build strong institutions that are capable of providing protection and opportunities for growth for our people. But the way that we build those institutions, the tools and the resources and the weapons at our disposal have to be spiritual weapons. We are not going to out-bullet and out-shoot and out-gun folks who are coming at us. But on the spiritual plane, there are tools and resources available to us that enable us to transcend the foolishness and the ignorance and the pettiness and just the insanity of those who are arrayed against us and enable us to be victorious. And so those are the thoughts that's on my mind tonight. And I'm sure some of what I've said is probably parallel to what Brother Thurman is thinking, but I'll pause there and you guide us as we get into the conversation, Sister Q.
Okay. Well, thank you for that introduction to the conversation itself. Brother Thurman, would you like to lay your piece on the table?
Yes, I want to start off by giving much praise and thanks to Brother Auntie for what he opened up with that's very vital for our people. As some of the folks in the church say, that'll preach, and he could continue on for the next hour or more to bring further clarity on what he was talking about. And I see much value in the topic tonight, community conversations. Every day in my mind it goes by that we don't have regularly scheduled community conversations. We're failing ourselves because we'll be missing the messages, the wisdoms, and the cultural values and spiritual values that Brother Onti has already started talking about when we don't gather together to have these regular community conversations. And when you mentioned the Ulu Mart, and that's something that that's still on the table in terms of a large scale facility. One of the things that's been talked about, and certainly in more recent years of us listening to us, is included in there, which would be the place that we would have, one of the places we would have these regular community conversations would be the Ulu Cultural Centers. And as a sister had written, and I'm paraphrasing what she said years ago, but wherever her message in so many words was that wherever African people are, we should have, we're using it tonight, community, but cultural centers that will enable us that we are in control. We open the door, shut the door, and we can stay as late as we want, as early as we want, and we can talk as black as we want. And it's essential that, as Brother Onte mentioned, we are under assault. Under assault, many things come to our mind. We've got to do something to protect ourselves. He asked that question, how do we protect ourselves? And we talked about the greatest weapon being the spiritual weapon. And we've got to get clarity mm-hmm. on what truly are spiritual weapons versus what is something that some people use the word spiritual, and it's really some indoctrination that was brought to our people by the invaders, and it's got the invaders' mindset and operating procedures of how they go about that, which is, has kept us weak, because if the invaders really were bringing us some true spiritual aid, we should be free now. But they brought to us really some corrupted, as John Henry Clark said, they took what we had, which was of great value, and they learned from us, and then they repackaged it and sold it back to us, and what they sold to us was corrupt and polluted, and it still is. And I could go on, and I do want to add, it's necessary in these community cultural conversations that we establish consistently, and make it plain that we're going to stick to it, and that is we've got to have some orderly method of talking. We need to be able as a people, which we can do it, and it's been done amongst our people, and I know it because I have been a part of it, and that is we should be able to talk about anything in life, anything that comes up in the world, but we've got to have some strong values for each other, for our community, that we could talk about anything and never argue about nothing. And we just got to establish, which we can easily do, some operating procedures, some ground rules that we would follow, and such as keeping things that you've got to say when you participate in a conversation concise and aim for short, direct sentences. And we've got to be consistent in what we're doing that's for the purpose of having community conversations that's going to lead us to our liberation and to our total freedom, and also along the way to our nation building, that we would know how to build the nation and rebuild our nations, but also how to maintain it, protect it. I'm done.
Thank you for that. We have a hand raised, so I'm going to take this caller. Yes.
I was just to say, I see your hand. Can I say one quick thing before you go to that caller?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. I thank Brother Thurman for mentioning the Community Cultural Center, and I think that's mm-hmm. a great place to begin this work, because one of the things that I think makes ULU unique is that the system that we're building is based on Ma'at and the Nguza Saba. And the question that I want to put to our listeners and those who may call in tonight is, what does this look like in your imagination? In other words, Ma'at is truth, justice, righteousness, order, balance, harmony, and reciprocity. We know the Nguza Saba, unity, self-determination, collective work and responsibility, cooperative economics, purpose, creativity, and faith. When we put those principles together into a value matrix, what then does our community look like? In when people who are hearing this think about this, what does it look like? What does it feel like? How do we move around each other? What kinds of tasks do we set for ourselves? And I ask that because we live in a culture that has principles, guiding principles, whether it's the Ten Commandments or the Constitution, and people give those things lip service, but no one really tries to live by them. And hence, we wind up in this wasteland where anything goes. So I just wanted to pose that question. In our imaginations, what would it look like to build a society, a community, that actually practiced Ma'at and the Nguza Saba? Thank you, Sister Q.
Oh, thank you, Brother Auntie. I'm going to take this call now. Caller with the last four digits, 3440. Please state your name, where you're calling from, make your comment, or ask your question. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Greetings, family. Sister Q, Brother Auntie, and Brother Thurman. This is Brother Shabaka calling from South Florida. And a very important topic, but we have to give it some solid context. And the reason I'm saying that is because I know several weeks ago when you were on, you were talking about guns, not for us, but for everybody else, fifth generational warfare, which is the application that the European is using to try to establish total control over other, not only of our areas inside the U.S., but have plans to control globally. COVID was sort of like a forerunner when he tested that to see how much control he has. So I guess the question I want is this. Spiritually, we have to define what that is and how it manifests to have us controlling ourselves amidst this environment in which the European wants total control. And let me give you an example. Bookman, the original revolutionary who started the Haitian Revolution, was spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
All right?
Right?
He was spiritual. He had a skull which was contained the blood of the Europeans and a stick in which he says when you go negotiate with it, you make sure you negotiate in blood. He called on the spirits mm-hmm. of the ancestors, all right, to help fortify that. Now, we're obviously this is not the Haitian Revolution, and obviously the Haitians outnumber to some extent the Europeans who had controlled the Hispaniola, Haiti is mm-hmm. what it's actually called. So my question is, what are we talking about when we say a spiritual reformation, you know, has got to guide us, all right? What does that look like? And what does that look like if we're talking about our communities, and we're talking about communities in the United States, all right, in which the Europeans is attempting to establish total control, not only in the U.S., but globally? And I'll listen to the comments. Thank you.
Thank you for the question. Thank you, Brother Shabaka. One of the things I would suggest, based on what Brother Shabaka just said about Bookman, is that we should at least have read Bookman's prayer once, you know, so we could get a distinction between, because Bookman was very clear that there's a distinction between the gods of the Europeans and the gods of our ancestors. So, that, I think, also, too, addresses the question of the spirituality that, or the religions that we've been given from others. And those same people have taught us that our own way of dealing on a spiritual plane, calling upon the ancestors and different things that we do, that is evil, and that there are a lot of us who still walk with that idea in our head. So I think it is a good question. How do we make sure, or how do we encourage our people to understand that there's nothing wrong with us practicing our own basic spiritual rituals and things. You know, the church says you can't do that, you know, and various different other religions say you can't do that. And I think that there are, even among the, what are they called? the conscious community, that's the word. Even among the conscious community, there are some who feel that calling upon the ancestors or the various different things that we do are a form of Satan worship or whatever, and they think that we should not be doing it. So how do we get on the same page in that arena? Do you have an idea, Brother Amti or Brother Thurman, of how we get on the same, get everybody on the same page? Or at least if not on the same page, in the same book, that it's okay?
I do have a thought, Sister Q. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you very well.
Okay. Well, one, I want to thank Brother Shabaka for a very profound question. I mean, that question goes right to the heart of what we're grappling with on tonight's call, I think. And that mm-hmm. he would mention Duddy Bookman and Cecile Fatima, who instigated the Haitian Revolution after having a prayer meeting in the woods, and spirit descended and kind of corroborated and gave them their marching orders and their marching ammunition, so to speak. In that same vein, Dr. Wade Nobles wrote a book called Island of Memes, M-E-M-E-S. Very powerful analysis, spiritual psychoanalysis of the Haitian Revolution. And the point that Dr. Nobles was driving at is the critical point that really we're trying to get at in tonight's conversation. And that is that a meme is equivalent to DNA. That's the physical chemical substance that transfers the genetic structure and makeup of an organism to the next generation. In terms of a meme, that is spiritual genetic material. In other words, it's not biological, but it is psychological. And it's an idea that once implanted in the hearts and the minds of a person or of a community, guide them so that they can replicate themselves through generations. So in talking about IT as an island of memes, what we're really wrestling with is what are these spiritual ideas that can replicate themselves across generations. And that's why our struggle has to be grounded upon an African value system. And that's why we start with Ma'at as the basis of thinking about what is it that we want to build. And in other words, it's like too often when we come into, you know, after the 60s and the 70s and the 80s, mm-hmm. when black people began to occupy positions of political influence in their communities, and we saw the same thing on the African continent when Africans began to take over the form of colonial administrations. When we got in these offices, we didn't have a clear vision of what it was we wanted to do. In other words, we replaced the white folks with black folks, but the black folks thought the same way the white folks did that they replaced, and they basically replicated the same systems of injustice and oppression that they inherited. The reason that the Haitian Revolution was so important was because the Haitians had a different idea of the kind of world they wanted to create for themselves and their children based on their own African spiritual philosophical systems, which, quite frankly, are consistent with Ma'at. And so as we look at our reality today, when we talk about truth and justice and righteousness and order and balance and harmony and reciprocity, and we ask ourselves, what would that look like when Ulu launches its first cooperative enterprise. Well, first of all, it's a democratic mechanism. In other words, regardless of how many units, how many co-op units a sister or a brother may own, they only have one vote in the decision-making process. So everybody in the enterprise stands on equal footing. And those people who are putting forward the strongest ideas, those will be what carries the day, not the fact that this person has a block of voters who will outvote this other side for whatever reason. So one of the first advantages that the ULU mechanism provides for us is it gives us a truly democratic forum in which to come together, talk about ideas, and then choose the course of action that makes the most sense. The last thing I want to say, and then I'll be quiet, is that when we say that our community is under assault, and Brother Shabak is right, and Sister Q, you've alluded to this many times yourself, COVID was just a smokescreen for a lot of very nefarious things to be injected into our community. But whether it's COVID or whatever it is, the first aspect of the assault is these are foreign ideas that are being injected into the minds of our people. If we lose the mental war, everything else becomes irrelevant. And that's why we have to start our work from the basis of what are the African values and what do they say in terms of how we organize ourselves and how do we even interpret reality. Once we have a strong African philosophical foundation, then we can be very clear about what ideas will work for us and what ideas are dangerous. For example, we talk about in ULU, for example, the idea that human beings are stewards over the land. In other words, the Creator gave us the land as a gift. We didn't make it. We didn't have anything to do with its production, but we are stewards. We are responsible for the caring of the land. And because it is a gift, therefore we cannot sell it. Yet we live in an environment where the sale of real estate is one of the primary ways of generating wealth. And so we as a people have to become very clear. Yes, we can acquire land and build on that land, but can we speculate on land and sell it and charge an up fee on it just based on the fact that we own it? In other words, the Creator was very clear about the purpose and the need for land. How do we use that land, though, says volumes about how obedient we are to this principle that the earth is a living organism and has to be revered and respected. Once we make the decision that we're going to exploit the land and the earth, it goes downhill from there. So let me just put that on the table for thought and hear Brother Thurman and your comments as well, Sister Q.
Okay. Brother Thurman?
Yes, I give thanks for everything that's been shared. And we've got to, when it's been said over and over that we are under attack, assault, war has been waged on us, we've got to break free of all of the contaminants of our enslavement and all of the contaminants of all, in all areas of life, religion, politics, sex and war and everything that was implanted in our mind, in our lifestyle by the invaders, those that are against us. And we go forth when we gather at these cultural community centers and have these cultural conversations to bring forth in every way that we can the original knowledge, the original principles and Brother Ankhe mentioned, you know, the Mayotte and the Nguzo Saba. And when we do that, we would, for one, we would have, we would be getting rid of waste and excess baggage that bogs us down. And we would begin to get clarity and begin to come together when we recognize that we've got to have a change in our total lifestyle. And Brother Ankhe mentioned the earth. Part of that change that we've got to make this for whoever of us that it applies to is we've got to get back in touch with nature and with the earth for multiple reasons, spiritual included, and but also our daily nourishment. And what would be the most appropriate place for us to get our nourishment? From the land and from the universe, but also when we get it from the land, then we got great clarity of where that food came from and what's, whether there is or there is not any contaminants on the land. And if we didn't put it there, then ideally it shouldn't be there. And but if we continue to go to others and enrich them in many ways so that they can continue to have more economic power and the weapons that come with that to dominate us, we're just, you know, working against ourselves. So we got to take charge with the land. And like some people say that to grow your own food is like printing money. And when we look at, we talked about Haiti and the success that they had in achieving their victories. And we can look around the world and there are others that have successes that is a model that we can draw on. And we've got to draw on these models of those of us that broke free of the invader mentality. One of them is Thomas Sankara. But he was making major beneficial changes for the African people. And even though his time was short, but he was making major changes in terms of the education of the people, feeding the people. And as Brother Ankhe talked about a little while ago, the Africans that have come forth in terms of a leadership position but came forth with a European mindset. And Brother Sankara broke free of those things. He immediately got rid of the previous administrations that had for the administration people, workers, staff, the administrative staff. He got rid of Mercedes and things like that because it was about being for the, it was a for the people movement and not a thing of following this European model where there are those that's in a higher position that's got prestige and on a higher position than the ones that's in poverty. Thomas Sankara was motivating the people that it's all about us. It should, so we got to get this I and me out of our head and out of our, and put in our spirit, in our mind, in our heart, us. It should always be about us, us lifting us. I'm done.
Thank you for that. One of the things I want to add to the conversation regarding the Haitian Revolution is that Africans came from all over the world to join in that fight. And so we think of it as just the Haitians won, but it wasn't just the Haitians. It was everybody. People came, you know, from everywhere, and we united and were able to win that island. What we have now is people come to the U.S. They don't come for the liberation of African people. They come for, I shouldn't say not all of them, but the majority, I think, come to partake in the American dream. And so I think that's another area where we have a disconnect, I would say. You know, so many of us are not on the same, we don't have the same reason for being, the same reason for doing things. So that we have people who come from other places who want to come here and become a major owner of whatever, rather than joining a collective and making things work for all of us. So I know that I have met a number of people from different parts of the world, melanated people from different parts of the world, who do have that in mind, but at the same time, there are, it seems to be most come with another idea. And it could be that some of them come with that, the idea to live the American dream, and then they get here and they get reawakened, and then they see that what they were sold, the bill of goods they were sold, is now holding. I'm done.
You know, Sister Q, I thank you for your comments, and I had the same experience that you did in terms of running across people that have come to the United States, many of them seeking the quote-unquote American dream, and then they run into a very rude awakening that dream is an illusion. And it's just a cover story for a global nightmare that is foisted on the rest of the planet to allow the 1% in this country to live, you can't even say in the lap of luxury, I mean, because it is so egregious, how much suffering the world is forced to endure so that a handful of people can have, you know, a garage full of luxury cars or several houses around the world. It really begs the question of what does it mean to be human? So we of all people know that this American dream is a nightmare for everybody else, and Malcolm was very clear about that. But the thing again about and thank you for sharing that many people came to Haiti to participate in that revolutionary struggle. And we know that once that struggle was successful by 1803, 1804, that idea mm-hmm. of enslaved people rising up and taking their own freedom in their own hands then spread across the world. It certainly fueled mm-hmm. The desire for freedom across South America and Simón Bolívar. And the idea of revolutionary freedom just fanned out across the globe. And I think that's part mm-hmm. of the dynamic that Dr. Wade Nobles was helping us to appreciate, the importance of these truth and radical principles that are in harmony with the cosmic order. In other words, because these principles are in alignment with the entire cosmos, they can't be resisted indefinitely. Eventually,
right.
freedom is coming to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
The challenge, the opportunity that each of us has is to nurture this seed, this spark of freedom, and to work unceasingly towards its achievement. That is the impetus that drives us lifting us. Back to Brother Thurman's point, this is a movement about we and us. Individuals will not overcome institutionalized oppression and racism and capitalism and all of these exploitative organizations. The only thing that can check their power and put them back is a counter-revolutionary institution that has as its mission the freeing of the land and the freeing of the people and the freeing of the resources. That's why Us Lifting Us is such a powerful vehicle. And the last thing, and well, I won't say the last thing, but in order for any of this to come to fruition, it boils down to something that you alluded to, Sister Q. And I want to ask it this way. Can we as a people get back to loving ourselves unconditionally? That, I think, is the greatest impediment that we have to overcome right now. We have been, I hate the term, but for lack of a better term at the moment, we've been brainwashed into thinking that we are deficient, we're not enough, we have no value, we're worthless. And we have been deprived of every avenue of expression as a collective to change that narrative. And yet, that is exactly what we must do. And so it boils down to in our neighborhood settings, in perhaps larger community gatherings, certainly within our families, in our regional organizations, we have to put in place a series of rituals where we get in, where we begin to practice in a very real way expressions of self-love, of being able to overlook each other's faults and strive to meet each other's needs. Rao Nefa Amin talks about it this way. He says, love is giving, seeking nothing in return. Every time I think about that definition and read that definition, it boggles my mind. Giving, seeking nothing in return. In other words, when we approach one another, our modus operandi ought to be, what can I give this person? Because I have it to give and they need it. That changes so much of the economic practices of American imperialism. In other words, and I saw this, and maybe you did too, Sister Q, when people were participating in these multi-level marketing schemes, whether it was A.L. Williams, whether it was Amway, whether it was Shaklee, whatever people were doing, they started looking at each other as a potential member in my network. You know, I can sell them something, or I can engage them in the network, and together we can make X number of dollars, right? But we did not see each other's humanity. We saw a means to an end. That is the value system of capitalism. It is individualism. It is materialism. It is the opposite of loving one another. In other words, where when I see Sister Q, my only question is, do I have anything that I can give her that she needs? And that's the end of the thought. Because when we begin to interact with each other on that basis, then I discover that everything that I need is supplied to me without obligation.
Exactly.
And so the gifts that I came to the planet with, whatever talents, whatever abilities, whatever sensibilities, I give them freely because I came to give them. And I'm not worried about the return because the reciprocal nature of the universe guarantees that there will be a return. But it's only I'm afraid that it won't come back. Now I'm starting to act a little front, you know. Now I'm a little I'm out of pocket. I'm off base. And so my question comes down to, Can we love ourselves unconditionally, and what will it take to get there?
You know, Brother Onsi, that what you said about loving ourselves reminded me of a situation I was in where they were doing an exercise, and everybody was in the circle, and the whole thing of the exercise was to say, I love me. So I would say, you know, I love me some Sister Q, right? And then the next person, Brother Onsi would say, I love Onsi. And Brother Thurman would say, I love Brother Thurman.
Mm-hmm.
And they start, it was like maybe 30 people in the circle. They got three people deep that said that they loved themselves. The next person said, I love Big Mama. And somebody, and it went around the circle. Nobody else ever said that they loved themselves. They loved their aunt. They loved their grandmama. They loved the baby. They loved everything, everybody but themselves. And the thing is, if you don't have it for yourself, how can you possibly have it for somebody? And we hadn't, you know, as they say, we're not there yet because everything is inside. We're always taught to look outside, but everything is inside. You bring it out of yourself and deliver it to the world. You don't take it from the world and pull it to yourself. So I think what you said about loving ourselves, that is a very key factor, and we generally don't, and for most of us, it seems to be that's okay.
You know, I remember, I'm trying to think, you know, there's a phrase that's over the temples in ancient Kemet that says, know thyself.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of the teaching, the idea behind the teaching is that when we truly come to know self, we bump into the divinity of the cosmos. We discover that divine presence, intelligence, power resides at the core of who we each are. And once we tap into that individually, once Sister Q runs into that divinity that's at the core of who she is, and Brother Thurman taps into that divinity that's the core of who he is, and Onsi taps into that divinity that's the core of who I am, once I recognize that in myself, I then can recognize it in everybody else. Until I recognize it in myself, to your point, to say that I love someone else is probably not quite all the way there. And so when I say, how do we get to a place of loving ourselves unconditionally, we recognize then that we each are mirrors to one another. So when I strive to love you and I push through to essence of who you are, I discover that the best of you also resides in the best of me. And then we have, I think, the beginning of kind of a symbiotic relationship where we can do anything together without feeling that we're in competition or somehow you're going to get more out of the deal than I'm going to get. You know.
Sure.
But,
yeah.
But I think the key is both how do we discover the capacity to love ourselves unconditionally and then practice that unconditional self-love with everyone that we meet, at least in our community.
Exactly.
Because that, I think, creates a climate, that enables us to work together. And without it, we tend to not be able to move as fast. Does that make sense?
Yes, that makes perfect sense. Because we would be in competition. We don't see ourselves in others. Yeah, that You know, we're doing so many remedial work, we could say, that we can't get the job done. Go ahead, Brother Sermon, I hear you.
Yes. We can get there, and we've got to recognize, that we're being socialized in all subject areas to be like we are, deficient mm-hmm. in terms of our cultural love and our spiritual love. And so what we got to do is we got to purposefully break that. And it's like Francis Wilson used to say, we must get our mind on the black side of the chessboard. So when the ones make a move from the other side, we counter that to keep them from checkmating us. But if, and she also, years ago at Howard University, did a lecture titled The Power of Crystal Black. And she said that at that time, many, many black folks had pictures and whatnot of Europeans and European deities and things like that, and Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, when you walk in your house, you don't have to look up at the wall at those whatnots and those white deities. Your mind already sees it. She said, take that stuff down. And she brought with her some paintings and pictures of richly pigmented crystal black sisters and brothers. And she said, put something up so that your mind sees this and it reinforces it in a beneficial way, crystal black. And that's towards being, so it's a ritual. So rituals, it's very important that we practice that to be back in love and to counter the unloving ways of living. And the rituals can include like Africans, ancient Africans, and current Africans that indulge in spiritual rituals. It puts them in that zone where they don't want to be in another zone. And so if we sing songs to each other and recite things, you know, like the oath to the ancestors and the principles of Mayad and the Nguzo Saba included. There's a song that Ray Hagen created called The African in Me Loves the African in You. And when we come together, there ain't nothing we can't do. Cause you easy, yes, you easy, easy to love. And we are. We got to get the European out of our head. And along the way, we cannot continue to contaminate ourselves. And so if those of us that's on the call tonight left the call and went somewhere and said, let's go somewhere to eat, let's go somewhere and have some fried chicken and some cheese and some soda and some other drinks, is that a ritual towards us loving ourselves, or is it nutricide? Which means the nutritional destruction of the black race. We can't be about loving ourselves and at the same time destroying and harming ourselves and advocating that, including European holidays. The African that really loves African people, African ancestors, the mother Africa, African culture, they reject those things and they get that excess polluted baggage off of them. And they celebrate and advocate that that's strictly about us, and be serious every day about being free. And then it's easy to love yourself and go out and love sisters and brothers wherever they are, wherever their head is. And we got to talk this kind of conversation at the cultural community centers. As I said earlier, we come to the cultural community centers, and we can stay as long as we want and talk as black as we want all day long. And we got to let go. We got to have the capacity to let go of the lies. And so earlier in the conversation, it was just mentioned about Mayad and Nguzo Saba, and the Ten Commandments was mentioned. But we got to come to the cultural community conversations, and we've got to let the people know that when it comes to origins of things, there was Mayat and the 42 principles. That is where the somebody created the Ten Commandments. I'm done.
Thank you for that. Okay, so have you both said all that you want to say at this point? Are you willing to let it drop right there? I know we've got a lot more to say.
Okay. I think we said a lot for tonight, Sister Pugh. I know the clock is looking at us.
And I'd like to say to you and Brother Onkin and to the family, we must continue this and expand.
For sure. Okay.
This is something that's vital. It's vital to our community. I'm done.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I just want to thank you, Brother Onkin and Brother Thurman, for tonight's discussion. I think we put some stuff out for people to think about. We want to thank everyone that joined us this evening, and we want to invite you to join us again next Thursday evening at 9 o'clock Eastern Time for another installment of Dare to Win. Peace.
Thank you, Sister Q. Thank you, Brother Thurman.
Thank you, Daniel.
Prime. Farewell.